You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
He's a gorilla of destiny, a Bullet Club OG, continuing on the legacy of the most feared name in all of wrestling. From Tonga to Japan to America, you are now entering Tama's Island with your host, the babyface heel, Tama Tonga.
And we are live on the Tama's Island Twitch channel. Thank you all for joining us. It's Tuesday. It's 6:30 p.m. Eastern. That can only mean one thing. We are recording this week's episode of Tama's Island. As always, I am your co-host, Ross W. Berman IV, the Folk City Hustler, the Culture Vulture, whatever you want to call me, the New Japan guy over at WrestleZone. I wear many hats. But one of them is that I am the co-host of this year podcast with the one, the only Tama Tonga. Tama, how are you feeling right now?
Dude, feeling great. I got my summer gear on. I got the shades always, man. I'm feeling ready. Talk to me, Ross. What's going on? We got a guy here, Ross.
I was just about to say, we got a guest with us from the Tama's Island subscribers. We got Lauren. Lauren, thank you, first of all, for joining us. How's your week been? How's your weekend been? How are you?
A little tired. I just woke up probably like about an hour ago. Busy with work, but I'm here now and I'm hopefully going to have a good time today.
You woke up about an hour ago. Where are you at, Lauren? Where are you staying at?
I work third shift, that's why. I'm in the East Coast. Yeah.
I was about to say him and me are on the same hours. He's working third shift. I'm covering New Japan events. We're all going to bed at dawn these days. But yeah, it's been a big week in the wrestling world, especially for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Let's get it right out of the gate to start. New Japan's coming back to the United States. New Japan is bringing a show to California, not to any venue in California. They're going to be at the Torch at the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum for NJPW Resurgence on August 14th. Huge news, not only for New Japan, but specifically for the New Japan Strong roster, who have basically been the kind of face of the advertisements for this New Japan show on the 14th. So, first of all, Tama, what did you think when you heard the announcement that y'all are going to be at the? I'm sorry. I remembered.
Hey, I'm happy we're back in the States. It's the Resurgence, perfect name for it. We are back live, first live show here in the United States in the past, what, year and a half? Two years? Damn,
I want to say the last time y'all were here was for that. It was again the California tour, the Showdown tour with Liger's kind of final run of the U.S.
Mm-hmm. We're excited, man. I think not only just us, but the fans are excited. Mm-hmm. Raise your hand if you're going to a show.
I'm trying. I'm moving. I got to figure out what's going on with American Airlines and all their workers right now. But I'm going to try and be there. Lauren, what did you think of the announcement when it was brought up?
The first thing I went to go look to see, like, where is this? And then I realized it's across the country for me.
Yep.
I was really excited that they're coming back to America. Yep. That could only mean a lot of good things are going to happen from here on out.
Yeah, no, I'm dealing with the same kind of logistics as you. It's halfway across the country for me. It's very much. I've got some money saved up from my travel budget since I didn't travel at all in the past like year.
Hey, your job should be sending you over there, not this job. The other job.
They do. But I'm a freelancer. So what they do is I go over there and then I send them the receipts and they cover me. I get it back eventually, but I have to be able to cover myself when I head out there. We're not all Hunter S. Thompson getting thousands of dollars to like go off to Vegas, do whatever the hell, and we can literally just keep calling the office and be like, hey, I need another like $3,000. I owe some guys. Like, no, we have to pay our own way. We are very much hustlers in that way. But yeah, no, it's a big trip for a lot of people, and it's a big venue because the Los mm-hmm. Angeles Memorial Coliseum, yes, it's not in the Coliseum proper, but it's in this fantastic venue that's like right in the shadow of the big arch that they've got out there. If you've ever seen any photos of the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum, it's a beautiful venue. They still have the Olympic torch. It very much feels like a big deal, which is why
it's... What's the seating, though? Do you know what the seating is on it?
I believe...
2,500 to 3,000?
It's about 3,000, I would think, with standing room and all that. Okay. Maybe 2,500. It's definitely going to be... They're still requiring masks, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be too spread out. It sounds like it's still going to have that energy we're seeing from AEW and that we're about to see from WWE as they get back on the road. And as I said, they, despite the fact that, yes, they have advertised that Moxley's going to be there, that Jay White's going to be there, and that Hiroshi Tanahashi is going to make the trek across the Pacific to be there, but they've also brought up that it's really going to focus on the NJPW strong roster, guys like Tom mm-hmm. Lawler, guys mm-hmm. like Fred Rosser, guys like Leo Rush. Even though he's retiring, he did say that he's going to fulfill some contractual obligations mm-hmm. for New Japan. This might be one of them. I'm not like... saying he's going to be there, but it does sound like everyone that you've been seeing on NJPW Strong is finally going to get to show out.
Jay White, right? Jay White, yep. Hikuleo, mm-hmm. you got Juice Robinson, David Finley. That's a strong yep. squad, man.
Yep. And we're also going to be getting a it sounds like an appearance from Jon Moxley, whether it's a title defense, whether it's just a match, mm-hmm. whatever. Jon Moxley's going to be fighting for New Japan on American soil. This was a big deal. If you remember the G1 climax, that opener that y'all did in Dallas in 2019, Moxley was not allowed to be there due to his contractual obligations with AEW. He's appeared on NJPW Strong, but that's a nebulous area these days. His last title defense was on AEW television, and so now that he's actually going to be wrestling for New Japan, advertised for New Japan on North American soil, that's a big deal. It's a big mm-hmm. it's a big win for both companies and a big win for camaraderie. I mean, what do you think, Lauren, about the idea that we're finally going to get a proper U.S. title defense at a New Japan show in North America?
And long overdue. Very yep. long overdue.
It definitely feels that way. I don't know. What do you think, Lauren, of the IWGP U.S. title right now? Because like it's divisive. Some people love it. Some people feel like it's been kind of kept in the shadows.
At first, I was really excited for it because it had meaning and it was getting defended and it was boosting, for Japan and for America. But lately, it's just like it's just kind of there. It's like it doesn't have any value. It's just like it's like a placeholder, basically. Okay. But I've always noticed something with Moxley. Whenever he holds a U.S. title, whether it's this New Japan or WWE, he really defends it. Because when he was a WWE United States champion, mm-hmm. what was it like? It was almost like 300 days.
Yeah,
right?
No, it was one of the longest reigns in the modern era of the United States title. And like you said,
No, I was saying there's just something with him and holding U.S. titles where he really defends it, or mm-hmm. he's always retained. So I don't know. It's just. Is that part of his contract or something? Like
I don't know because here's the thing. Like the WWE United States title run he had, that was very much WWE's decision that he was defending it once in a blue moon. He was also part of the Shield, and so everything the Shield was doing, the United States title was wrapped up in that. He's doing a lot of tag matches, and so I understand how the title kind of got pushed to the side. In this case, though, it's not Moxley's fault. It's not AEW's fault. It's not New Japan's fault. We just had a pandemic for the past year and a half. Mm-hmm. And so there wasn't the ability for him to go back and forth to Japan like he used to defend that belt. Now, I disagree. I kind of think that now that it's become this rare jewel that, like, you have to, you basically have to come to Moxley to get now, I think that kind of adds this, like, this prestige to it, because whether it's Kenta on New Japan Strong, right, whether it's Yuji Nagata on AEW Dynamite, his title defenses have this electricity. Like, they mean something now because they're so scarce, because they happen so rarely that you're like, this might be the time that someone brings that title back to New Japan and out of Jacksonville. I mean, what do you, I see you kind of ready to chime in.
Yeah, I agree with you with Mox and Kenta. You know, Kenta has been on fire, especially on especially right now, right?
He's hot.
And him making that way to AEW, that's all everybody ever talked about. And I think that brought a lot of light. Mox, man, he's been hot holding that title. Anything that he touches right now, anyways, go, people following to watch. And then you have, you know, as a second title defense, I mean, for this year, right? It will be Yuji Nagata. So you got a legend coming all the way from Japan. And to be on AEW, that's it. I mean, it brought eyes. It brought eyes, and I think everybody understands, you know, what's going on with that title. And I there's weight behind that title, and with Mox holding it, I gotta give it to him, man. So whoever takes it off Mox, that's gonna be a nice shine on them.
It definitely feels like, and especially now that it's a proper New Japan show in North America with fans, if this is another case where it feels like it might be that moment, it might finally be time for John Moxley to get that title taken from him. But John Moxley isn't the only Wednesday or Friday or Saturday night attraction that is coming on to the NJPW Resurgence or coming to New Japan Strong, because it's been advertised that a couple of names that are very familiar to you, Tama, are coming back to New Japan Pro Wrestling. Carl Anderson, Luke, Doc Gallows, the Good Brothers, they're going to be part of Tag Team Turbulence at the on the New Japan Strong shows, and it sounds like they're going to be at New Japan Resurgence on the 14th. So you've not had a shortage of words between you and Anderson over the past year. How does it? He's finally coming to your territory, so to speak. He's coming within swinging distance.
That's all I've been asking for. Come my way. Come my way. You know where I'm at, Carl Anderson. You know where I live. You know where I stay. Come on. I know he's taking steps. He's making those little steps to come my way, man. Island hopping to get to me. Let's go. Let's go, man. Come on. Him and Doc Gallows. Look, they're a formidable tag team. They've been doing their thing. They joined the wrong side, unfortunately. But hey, we'll wait. We'll wait when you come over to get that ass whooping, Carl. I love you, but I hate you at the same time.
Ooh, this is gonna. Shout out to Mab Ghost in the chat. This is gonna get spicy. I'm really excited to see where this might go, because as anyone who's been listening to Thomas Island knows, as anyone who's been listening to Talk and Shop knows, as anyone who's been listening to really just paying attention to Bullet Club or wrestling in general over the past year, there was always this wonder, especially with the way you talk, Tama, that are you gonna come to them? Are they gonna come to you? And now, they're not necessarily coming directly at you, but they're coming to New Japan, and so it feels very much like they're coming to you.
They know where the money's at. They know. I'm not desperate. No, but they are. Come to Japan. We'll give you a nice welcome. It's been, what, 6 years now?
Ooh, yeah, something like
that. Sold your soul to the devil.
It's been just about 5 years. They left in 2016, and here we are in late 2020 or mid 2021, and the combustible elements are coming together. I mean, what'd you think, Lauren? How'd you kind of feel when it was announced that the Good Brothers were coming back?
I was really excited to see that, because, you know, it's gonna be a big reunion when they come back to New Japan to compete. So I'm looking forward to see who they're gonna be up against or what's gonna happen just in general.
And they've definitely got a very interesting they have a very interesting kind of tournament on their plate, because the tag team Turbulence tournament that's going to be happening on New Japan Strong, it's not traditional New Japan tag teams. Like, they are really going to be having their first match is going to be up against Clark Connors and TJP. You've got guys like Yuji Nagata and Ren Narita are a team. Fred Yehi and Wheeler Utah, Kevin Knight and the DKC, Jarrell Nelson, Royce Isaacs, Brody King and Chris Dickinson, JR Kratos, Danny Limelight. These are not guys that that the Good Brothers have a lot of history with. These are going to be a lot of first time ever matches. These are going to be a lot of them kind of feeling out the future of New Japan, especially New Japan in America. And so it feels like it definitely gives it this, it gives it this spin, because, you know, what they've been doing with Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks is very good, but it's very safe because we know Omega, the Young Bucks and the Good Brothers. We know that that's a team that can always kind of work together. The stuff, it kind of feels similar to what they're doing in Impact, where they really do kind of, now that they're free of WWE, they kind of get their claws into the future of tag team wrestling. And it, mm-hmm. I mean, and they're also getting some singles matches in Impact. You never know. They might, you never know what kind of path these guys are going to cut through the kids. But what do you kind of think of the year that, I'm talking to Lauren, what do you think of the year that the Good Brothers have had? Because this is the year they've done Impact. This is the year they've done AEW. Now they're in NJPW. They're in three promotions right now.
It's definitely been their loudest year, because you hear about them, you always see them. And I think when they left WWE, I think it was better for them, because they really are making like their presence known to everyone who competes against them. Whether you love them or you hate them, they're there and they're not going away anytime soon. And they look better than ever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm with you. They really have stepped up their entire presentation, I think, since they've left WWE. Like, they were ass kickers and they were cocky sons of bitches when they were in New Japan. Mm-hmm. But they've kind of got this, like, and it's the same with guys like Matt Cardona. It's the same with guys like EC3. They've got this kind of rock star way that they carry themselves now, where it adds a whole new flavor, because it's not the Good Brothers of old. It's kind of similar to what Jericho's doing, where it's the stuff you know and love about Jericho, but it's in this very cocky, larger than life package. And so it's going to be a spicy summer. It's going to be a very, very spicy summer, especially as the wrestling world kind of comes back to normal. As we've talked about last week and in Happy Hours, WWE is going to be touring again. Their Money in the Bank show is going to be in front of a live audience. AEW, I believe, gets back on the road next week after about a month of being kind of put in the shadow of the NBA playoffs. Their ratings were kind of screwed with when they were on, they were on Fridays. Now this week they're going to be on Saturdays. And so it has kind of thrown them into disarray a little bit, because you don't necessarily know where to find them. They don't necessarily have the ratings wins on their shoulders to kind of lean on. And so everything kind of has to be about the product right now. They have to be delivering a great TV show, or else the numbers are going to eat them alive. And I think they've been delivering a pretty damn solid show. I mean, it feels like they are in a slight holding pattern, but there is some real fun developments that are happening, whether it be Jungle Boy and Kenny Omega's feud, whether it be the continuing, I keep calling it the Righteous Gemstone phase of the Young Bucks, as they kind of go more and more into this kind of cartoon character versions of themselves. Lauren, you've been keeping up with AEW. What do you kind of think of, especially these NBA playoff shows that they have been doing, where they kind of have to deal with a Friday night or a Saturday night schedule, and they have to make a big loud bang to kind of get people to pay attention? Do you think they've been doing that?
Yes and no. The problem is the time slot. It's at 10 o'clock Eastern time. That's a tough spot, because usually people are out doing stuff, or, I mean, for me, I'm usually working. And I always like a consistent, like, routine. Like, if it's always on Wednesdays at 8, it's like, I have my routine, I, you know, I'm ready for it, but they keep changing it. But at the same time, none of the shows, I feel like, have been lackluster. They've all been pretty solid. It's just a bad spot. That's just, and you can't get out of that, so.
No,
I mean, everything I've seen, like, on my DVR, or I've been able to catch, I've really enjoyed, so. But it's just that time slot, like, 10 o'clock p.m.?
Yep.
That's rough.
No. And you know, I keep saying it, people have lives and there is only so much that you can ask of them on a Friday or of a Saturday night. But I'm with you that they've been doing a really solid job of making sure that, yes, the numbers aren't in our favor right now. Yes, the time slots aren't in our favor right now. But you'll be able to look back on this period and say they kept their head down and they kept churning out solid programming. It definitely feels like AEW's gearing up for a big... This tour feels like it's going to be really big. I said this in Happy Hour. Whenever AEW was on the road for that first stretch of tapings during their first year, at the end of every show, it felt like a company going out of business because they were like, all right, who wants a turnbuckle pad? All right, who wants Cody's weightlifting belt? I think one of the Young Bucks gave away a boot at one point. Like, they kept giving stuff away.
I was there for one of those shows, like, when they were in Cleveland 2 years ago. And, last year, Cody gave away his boots to some kid. And they were giving away stuff, but it was just nice. It's because they first started, so, and usually that was, like, after the taping or the show, so... Mm-hmm.
It was very much a way to kind of make give the fans a moment where they can say that, like, even like the TV show was good, and then once the cameras went off, they actually bonded with us. They actually brought us into the.
Cool. I like that.
It makes it
all the worthwhile that because they're investing in the fans, and they're investing their time with us, and we're investing our time with them. So it's great to have that and to see that actually.
And this my larger point about those giveaways is that if this is how grateful they were in that first year, imagine how grateful they're going to be in this post-pandemic tour where they're basically going around to all of the fans who have kept them the number one wrestling program in the country for them. I mean, outside Raw and SmackDown get a lot more viewers, but they're killing the demo right now with AEW, and so they are doing amazing work on that end, and now they get to thank those fans somehow, some way. Whether it's Cody's going to be doing a strap match, I believe, in Miami. They've got all kinds of stipulation matches that are coming out. It kind of feels like the old WCW days, where you would have like a house show that was Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair in a no disqualification match that went like 80 something minutes or whatever. But it has that kind of fan first vibe to the booking, for lack of a better term. It feels like they are trying to make a show that people not only watch out of routine, but that they can get excited about. I mean, it's like I said, they have not, while they've been in a holding pattern, they've still debuted Andrade. They have kept this pinnacle Jericho thing very much centered on guys like Sammy Guevara, Wardlow, and Jake Hager got a showcase. And so it definitely feels like they've made very good use of this holding time. Whereas, some companies, WWE, they've, when they're in a holding pattern, some stuff like Roman really works, and then some stuff like Alexa doesn't really work. Whereas with AEW, even the stuff that's not working for me is kind of working for me. I don't. Am I crazy, Lauren? What do you kind of think?
No, you're right on. You're right on the money.
What do you think, Tama? The whole dynamic there.
Hey, everybody's trying to figure it out, right? At this time, in this holding period. So you gotta throw something at the wall to see what sticks, you know. I think, look at all the doors happening. The show from last week, we talked about anything can happen, right?
Yep.
I think everybody's just throwing everything, see what works this time. And props to AEW for maneuvering the way they are during this time, right? Not only, okay, we're kind of coming out of the pandemic, but then now with the whole sports getting moved around, they're doing what they can to stay afloat. And give them props for that, you know. Gotta give them props.
No, absolutely, and that's what I'm saying is even when the numbers aren't in their favor, they're making sure that they can still lean on that programming. They can still lean on a good show. And speaking of, you know, kind of throwing everything at the wall, whereas AEW. I think they kind of take a less is more approach to a lot of their stuff. Like Andrade's debut is enough. They don't need to make it this huge. Like, he didn't challenge Kenny Omega to it. He didn't have a title match with Kenny Omega's first night. You know, like they've kept it very slow. Whereas WWE right now are literally throwing everything at the wall. On Friday we had a Hell in a Cell match. On Sunday, we had two Hell in a Cell matches. And then on Monday, we had another Hell in a Cell match that featured one of the guys who was in Hell in a Cell 24 hours before that. Every network got a Hell in a Cell match. Fox got Hell in a Cell. Peacock got Hell in a Cell. USA got Hell in a Cell. And so it does kind of feel like WWE is also learning how to maneuver this new world where it used to be they were all on USA. They never had to really worry about, well, how's Fox going to feel about the fact that Peacock gets the big Hell in a Cell match that we're building to? Mm-hmm. And how's USA going to feel about the fact that we're wondering how Fox feels about that? And so it very much feels like, and this is kind of backed up by Brandon Thurston over at WrestleNomics, that it sounds like Fox said, hey, you've got this big Roman Reigns Hell in a Cell match. There's also other Hell in a Cell matches on the pay-per-view. Give us this one. Because we're very... Back when Fox signed the deal with WWE, the WWE Network was still a thing. So Fox wasn't becoming a promotional vehicle for Peacock, a streaming service they have no stake in. And so it very much feels like WWE gave them a Hell in a Cell match. And then when USA heard that Fox got the first Hell in a Cell match on live television in 20-something years, they went, well, hey, hang on a second. Are we just chopped liver over here? We have been a home for you for years. In fact, the last time Hell in a Cell was on television, it was on our network. And so suddenly, 24 hours after Hell in a Cell, we have another Hell in a Cell match on live television. It very much feels like a more is more type situation of just they throw as many cell matches at them as possible. You can't complain when you're getting that many big matches, but it also, I don't know. It feels very hollow. Lauren, what'd you kind of think of our Celltastic weekend that we had?
You know, I thought at first WWE was like trying to take a page from TNA's when they had Lockdown because everything was a cage match. But as far as like all these Hell in a Cell matches, it's just too much because it doesn't make Hell in a Cell meaningful. It's just like it's like a gimmick match now and they just throw it there. It's not like years ago when it first debuted, like, you know, oh, people are excited. Oh, it's going to be dangerous. It's going to be exciting. No, now it's just like, it's just kind of there. It's just the background. I personally don't like them anymore because I'd rather have just seen them all like a normal match because it's just, I don't know. It's just not exciting. I don't think it's exciting because they're just throwing it, you're shoving it down our throats and there's like nothing special about it.
I kind of agree with the fact that there's nothing like special about it, but I think that, I don't know, we live in a world where we get a TLC match every year, we get a Hell in a Cell match every year, we get two Money in the Bank matches.
But it's just too much, though. It's like, it's like, what am I going to like, if when you have it on a pay-per-view, what's the point of watching on pay-per-view or Peacock and then watching it on TV for free? What's the difference?
It's a very good question. I think especially now that they're navigating this streaming world where like they don't have to rely on people needing to pay $50 for it. Like every other company right now, because even when New Japan does a big event, they'll have a Fight TV stream available for people to buy. Everyone now says, "Hey, we are putting on a show where you can pay $20 for this one show. You can pay $30, $40, in AEW's case, $50 or $60 for this one show, and it's going to be worth it." Whereas WWE just has to give you $10.99 or $9.99 a month's worth of content. And on that level, they over deliver. They definitely give us more than $9.99 in content. But
even when New Japan had their ladder matches, they've only had like what, maybe two or three?
Two.
Those are exactly really true. Exciting, but you don't see them having it like every month or every because it's just was like something to look forward to, and it paid off both times. It paid off very well.
It goes back to, you know, WWE, especially because WWE owns a trademark on Hell in a Cell. They own a trademark on TLC. Like it's not about the stipulation. It's now about the brand. Like Hell in a Cell isn't a match. Hell in a Cell is a brand. Elimination Chamber is a brand, and so it kind of goes back to the way WWE is about like licensing, like with New Japan, with AEW, with Ring of Honor, with all of them. The money is still in the fans paying to see the show, whether it's at live events, whether it's through subscriptions, or whether it's through pay per view. It's about the fans paying for the show and buying some merch, which is related to seeing the show, for the most part. Whereas with WWE, it's all about licenses right now. I mean, the reason they had the year that they had over the last year is they didn't have to sell a ticket, and they still have millions of dollars in network fees, licensing deals, brand contracts, cross-promotional, yada yadas. And so they are no longer a company that needs, and this is, it's going to be very interesting to see how after a year in the Thunderdome they deal with live fans again, because this is a company that doesn't need fans. They've done over a year of television where they control the crowd reactions. Yes, they have little faces on the screen, but they coach the, if you've ever been in the Thunderdome, they produce the people in the Thunderdome. They say, yeah, let's see those big smiles, or oh no, you don't like it, let's get some thumbs down. And then the noise is all done by the sound designer, who's, you know, sweeping up the cheers, and sometimes he'll bring in the boos, and then he'll hit that chant button every now and then. It's a, they've been making movies, and they have to go back to doing theater. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how that transition is, where like a company like AEW has been doing theater this whole time. New Japan has been doing theater this whole time. And so they don't have that, they don't have that weird transition back into the world of fans.
What have you been enjoying more, Ross? The theater type or the movie type?
Oh, theater type, hands down.
Yeah, just same like here, theater, big time.
Because even if WWE, even if the pay per view last night was live, or Sunday night was live, it didn't feel live. None of it feels live, because there's no fans there. It's like even SNL has a crowd, because you need, if you're live, you need people reacting in real time so that energy translates through the screen.
And even if it's bad, it's still good in the end, because you know it's real. It's not fake. It's not like they tried to like make you think like this is what you have to like. This is what they want you. This is how you feel.
I don't know.
I'm with you. I agree. I'm into the theater. I like it live. I like, even as a performer, I like it to the energy of the people really feeds my performance.
It's a huge difference. No matter how big the show is, no matter who's there, it's always better to go live, no matter what the show is.
Like I'll point out the New Japan tour that y'all have been doing, like with the last night's Korakuen show. That was main evented by the never 6-man tag belts being defended. Everything about that match hinges on how much the crowd has gotten behind Chaos, and how much their reactions. It's not this canned noise that, you know, is from people that were cheering 20 years ago. Like there are dead people in the WWE audiences right now, because the noise is from so long ago that it's a ghost audience.
Yeah.
Whereas with New Japan, it's live people that you can see getting behind people that you're either rooting for or booing people that you're not. And so it creates this community with the audience that WWE just doesn't have right now, because I'm not one of the people on the screen. You know, it's like I'm not one of the people on the screen. Maybe they're using one of my shouts from a Raw that they taped in Rosemont 10 years ago or whatever, but it's not – It's all hollow. It's all fairy dust. Do you get the same kind of vibe? Oh, okay.
No, I saw something the other night. I watched a little bit of Hell in Cell on Sunday night. Again, it was Lashley versus McIntyre. And Lashley, I think he choke slammed McIntyre on the outside, and McIntyre was rolling. It's supposed to be on a table. Now, when the camera went away and came back, there was a hand pushing table bits all over the place. And I said, what the hell is that? I said, so I'm questioning, did homeboy go on a pad and then somebody else just pull all the table bits on?
That is the running theory right now, is they choke slam Drew McIntyre onto a crash pad a la Jericho and MJF. And now, and then, yeah, they had a hand underneath there pushing all of the debris back out. It was, and that's one of those things where it's like, they've gotten so used to making movies that, you know, they're now like, well, we don't have to do the choke slam through the table. And it's like, well, when you get in front of fans again, you're going to have to do the choke slam through the table. Like it goes back to the Jericho MJF discussion we had about, it's not my fault that you promised a guy going through a table. That the whole thing was built around a guy being chokeslammed through a table. That was your idea, and so you have to follow through on that. Whereas now they're like, well, we don't, because we're making movies, and so we can put a crash pad out there, and there's no fans to see us moving. And they have used crash pads, like Shane McMahon at WrestleMania 32. There was a crash pad there that they snuck in. Like they do the big, you know, stunt show stuff in front of the live fans, but because they've been in this Thunderdome, that hand makes you think they're getting maybe a little sloppy because they haven't had to hide, you know, they haven't had to hide any of the tricks. They can just do it out in the open and make sure they're, you know, editing right or make sure they're shooting right. Like, if you watch that Hell in a Cell match, it's the most claustrophobic Hell in a Cell match I've ever seen, because every fight takes place in one of the corners of the cell. Yeah. And so they're just, it's the cameraman right up on them. You can't get a full view of anyone. Like, it there was a conceptual way that it worked, but it also kind of, I don't know, it felt very, very cramped. Like, Lauren, what do you kind of think of the way the Thunderdome has been? Now that we're going to finally be moving out of the Thunderdome, like, what do you think of, its legacy?
My biggest wonder is going to be this: when WWE goes back to having live performances in front of actual people, how are the wrestlers going to react to that? Because they've been behind all these, like, screens where they can't actually yell at them or distract. I don't know if that's the word to use, but it's a different vibe when there's like someone, like, you know, 20 feet from you, as opposed to like someone who's like on a screen. But I mean, at first I thought the Thunderdome was pretty neat because, you know, we couldn't actually go, so it felt like we were actually there. But I feel like it's going to eventually just fizzle out if everything goes back to full capacity and everything's back to normal. So
that's
while it lasted.
Well, from my view, from a wrestler's view, I think, to answer your first part, I think the wrestlers are going to be fine when we go back live. I think they're going to feel the energy. And once you've been training as a wrestler, you've been training for years and years and years. You know, it's like muscle memory. You know, it was the same thing when we were off. We didn't wrestle all last year, right? We didn't wrestle for 8 months. Mm-hmm. But when we came in, it was just like muscle memory. The only thing that was kind of shot was our endurance. We kind of like ran out of breath quicker, but that build came right back too. But I think from a wrestler's point of view, once they get back, I think the fans come back, will be right back in. I think they'll do even better because we feed off that. We feed off the fans. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just for that first part, I'm with
you. Right? No, I understand.
No, and it makes a lot of sense because like even before the pandemic, before the Thunderdome, there were certain WWE superstars where it's like they don't know how to react to fans that get in the way of their cadence, that get in the way of their, and that's, I feel like that's just an age old performer thing. There are either people who can roll with it or there are people who can't. And so like, it's just going to be another case of learning who in the Thunderdome era is able to roll with it, who can't. And if WWE's history backs up, the people who can roll with it are going to be the people that, you know, we see a lot more of.
How long has it been now? Like a year. It's been a year since they've had the Thunderdome, right?
It's been about a year of the Thunderdome itself. It's been over a year of like the no fan shows,
right, okay.
Like, cause they were in the Performance Center for a few months. Mm-hmm. And I think it was maybe Money in the Bank. Maybe it was last year's Money in the Bank was the first Thunderdome. But it's just around a full year. It's going to be interesting to see how people react to people like Bobby Lashley, because in the Thunderdome, Lashley's full-blown heel. Like, people, you know, the boos are there, people don't like Lashley, but he's not that guy when you start to talk to fans on Twitter or on Facebook or just in general. Like, there are people who kind of like...
Nice. it's not even
that Bobby Lashley's nice, it's just that people like this guy. Even as the, you know, kind of dominant asshole heel that he's been with MVP... He's still kind of backing it up in a way that like makes you almost root for him. Like, especially with someone like Drew McIntyre, who's been like a WWE project since 2010. And he's always been very much this, Vince called him the chosen one early in his career. And he's been trying to prove that ever since. And now that you have a guy like Bobby Lashley sending him to, you know, rock bottom, now that he's lost to Riddle and can't be in the Money in the Bank, this ascendant Bobby Lashley is going to be an interesting force for fans to deal with. I don't know. What have you kind of thought of Bobby Lashley's run, Lord?
It's like I said, I keep saying it's long overdue because I feel like he should have been a champion many years ago. And I'm just hoping when everything goes back to full capacity normal, that he doesn't lose the momentum he has now. I hope he actually goes further. Like, it helps him better in the long run.
It's very possible. They might have like a situation. I don't want to, you know, this is going to sound like sacrilege to a lot of our older wrestlers. They might have a situation like The Rock on their hands where like he's very much a heel. He's a cocky heel. He's confident and people are starting to react to that. Mm-hmm. And so it might be the minute you get him in front of a live fan, people are chanting almighty at him. I don't know. He's got an energy to him. He's got a legitimacy to him that I think is kind of matching what Reigns is doing on SmackDown. I think the two mm-hmm. top champions of the brands right now really carry themselves like champions. And so I'm interested to see what happens when they take that in front of a live crowd. And if they still are champions or if the Emperor has no clothes, you know?
Hey, speaking of the heels, man, how about that WWE heel that's getting people all worked up on social media, Eva Marie?
Oh,
you have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand. And even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow. I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I'm glad that's it. This is a good transition because I was just about to talk. It's not just Eva Marie now. Eva Marie has Piper Niven in her corner. Piper Niven even tried to call herself Piper Niven, but she's apparently Dewdrop, according to Eva Marie. Eva Marie has wrestled probably two, I think she's on her second match, her second appearance, because Dewdrop did the wrestling for her since her return, and she has the most heat of anyone in the company. I mean, people hate Eva Marie. Not like they hate Eva Marie the way they hate like Enzo, where it's like there's a palpable
oh, that's a little, I think it's a little harsh.
I think Enzo, they have this thing where like I don't even think half of it's intentional. Part of it's what they've done, and part of it's just people don't like them overall. There's something about Eva Marie, especially with all of the, you know, she kind of became the face of the budget cuts because they're bringing in Eva Marie as they've let go of all of these fantastic wrestlers like Ruby Riott. And so I don't think a lot of this is fair to Eva Marie, because yes, I think she's doing a good job of rolling with the heat she already has, but she didn't pour the gasoline on herself. Someone else poured the gasoline on her, and so the fact that she's kind of rolling with it is it's endearing. It's endearing me to Eva Marie. It's not endearing anyone else to her, but I think that'll work in her favor. I mean, what do you think, Tom, of her? Like you're a shit stirrer. Hey. She's getting in there. She's stirring the pot.
I can appreciate it. I can appreciate the heel works, man. Look, it's like the Bucks, right? The more people shit on you, the more you lean into it. You got it. Mm-hmm. You have to. And if somebody, you know, gives you gasoline, shit, throw a match in it. Why not, man? You know, you're put in this position. I think there's people just hating the fact that she's a pretty girl. She's right. She's mm-hmm. pretty. She got this like following on Instagram, social media, and but her wrestling sucks. So they feel that these opportunity that's been given mm-hmm. to her is only because of her looks. Right. Yeah. And mm-hmm. you love to hate on that, I guess. Hey. Mm-hmm. But
she kind of reminds me of another kind of one of her contemporaries. Chelsea Green kind of has the same kind of heat where like I think people really just don't like the fact that she's a very beautiful woman who's also smart enough to get under people's skin. You know, like mm-hmm. so I think so many people want the beautiful woman to be this, you know, not secondary, but this background character that has no agency, that has no, you know, real weight to them. And so when they see someone like Chelsea Green or like Eva Marie that's smart enough to know that it's going to get twice as much under their skin because it's not just a person doing this, it's a beautiful person doing it. I gotta raise a Red Bull to it. I think it's right. I think it's fantastic stuff. Because I'm not the person to talk about Eva Marie's wrestling. She seems to be doing fine. I haven't heard about her hurting anyone. It seems like she's a fairly decent wrestler, but she's a damn good personality. And she's a smart personality. And especially in WWE, that's the game. Like if you got the personality, you'll be look at guys like RJ City, Malcolm Bivens, guys who have literally just made their whole thing off of the fact that like they are a personality you want to watch. Mm-hmm. It's definitely I think the future's bright for Eva Marie. I really do. as much as it probably pains a lot of people to hear, the future is hers right now if she keeps up with what she's doing.
Right.
But also, we got, you know, if we're talking about Eva Marie, we got to talk about Piper Niven. We got to talk about Doudrop, because this is a woman who they have kind of brought in to be the wrestler for Eva Marie, right? Like, that was the whole game of the first match was she won the match for Eva Marie. Now, Doudrop, Piper Niven, doesn't want to help team with Eva Marie anymore. And so it is kind of adding this whole, this edge to Piper Niven, because now she's not just someone that people support. She's someone that people feel has been unjustly stepped upon. Like this is, she has that kind of, she's become an instant underdog just in the way that they've had Eva Marie treating her. And so they've killed two birds, I think, with one stone here in making a badass heel in Eva Marie. Well, not a badass heel, but a smart heel in Eva Marie. And then, What is likely to be a badass babyface in Piper Niven when she finally kicks ass and starts taking names. And Lauren, what did you kind of think of the Eva Marie Doudrop partnership?
Why would they name it Doudrop? That's the thing I don't get.
the only case of that specific spelling of Doudrop showing up before WWE is on Urban Dictionary, where it is a term for a woman who may prefer, not necessarily a lesbian, not necessarily bisexual, just someone who may have sapphic tendencies, so to speak.
When I first heard that, it's like, seriously, WWE is going to call her Doudrop as opposed to Piper? I've always liked Piper Nivens. I thought she's underrated, but now I think she's going to have her moment to shine. Her being paired up with Eva Marie, I think it's not actually a bad combination, considering that you have one who's a beautiful person and one who actually does all the fighting. So I think in the end, it's going to work out well for both of them.
I bring up the Urban Dictionary thing because I think a lot of people got very confused about Doudrop. There were some people who liked the way that they kind of let Piper Niven introduce herself as Piper Niven before Eva Marie cut her off. But once you add specifically that spelling and what it means, it does kind of turn it, because Doudrop is not... It's not a pejorative, but it's not like it doesn't sound like a term of endearment either. It's very much a sort of, you know, it's giving someone a nickname that they don't necessarily want. And so that's a classic schoolyard fight. And so that I'm real interested in the base of that storyline, whether it goes the direction we all think it's going to. I don't know, but they've got some very simple, very classic building blocks there. It definitely, like we said last week, anything can kind of happen now. Anything can happen, because we've gotten to the point where, you know, I think wrestling in general has adapted to social media better than a lot of people give it credit. So just like, I think there are a lot, like you see, we all saw this past week, I believe it was Rob Schamberger was talking, the guy who does the WWE paintings, was talking about the fact that, could you imagine if internet wrestling fans were around for Mankind's debut, which they were? Can you imagine if they were around for all these various, like, older things? There have always been internet fans of wrestling. They now take up a larger percentage because everyone's on the internet now. Back in the 90s, there was only a certain group of people that were on the internet. You know, it wasn't everyone was on the internet. And so it was a small section. But now that everyone's on the internet, companies have to kind of adapt to that. And I think with this Doudrop thing, WWE hooked people from the minute they threw out the idea that they were changing Piper Niven's name through the introduction. They got people to go, well, hang on, what are they doing with Piper Niven? I'm not sure I like this. And it's like, yeah, you're getting behind it. You're getting behind her. You want to stand up for her. That's the best thing. That's what like Matt Cardona is doing in GCW. He's getting GCW fans to stand up for Nick Gage, even though Nick Gage doesn't need anyone to stand up for him. I mean, he's going to slice him, he's gonna slice some dude with a pizza cutter. Meanwhile, Matt Cardona says something like, I spent 10 years locked up, and GCW fans start popping in. Well, that's WWE is not the same as prison. It's like, no shit. And Nick Gage is going to make him eat those words. I get the vibe, but like, it's the way that, the way that wrestling just as a business has kind of learned to kind of blend that world, you know, because like Tama, you're no stranger to the world of social media. You're no stranger to the way that wrestling can blur those lines and the way that you can kind of boost business simply by, you know, by shit talking someone. So what how do you kind of feel like the wrestling business has dealt with the social media age?
Well, with the social media, it's just another avenue to project your character, what you're pushing in front of the TV. So there's no different, except the only big difference is I'm in control of what I produce on whatever platform I'm using, whether it's Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, or wherever. But you're in control of you. Right. Instead of like Vince McMahon telling me how to portray my character, I am in control and I give that out. And that's the fun part about social media.
Well, and that seems to be the big thing that companies like New Japan, AEW, and others have over WWE now. Because once WWE started coming after people's Twitch streams, coming after people's third-party sponsorships, that's when you start seeing guys like Miro and Chelsea Green and a lot of wrestlers really start to push back. Aleister Black, Tommy End, Zelina Vega especially, and even Paige, fighting against the fact that like, they either get a cut of their cameo fees or they have to, everything has to be approved on the Twitch. Whereas like right now we're on a Twitch channel that New Japan has literally no control over whatsoever. It's just you. Like I log into the Twitch studio, but it's basically all you. And so it's, and same with AEW. Now Miro's running his Twitch channel. Kip Sabian and Penelope Ford run their Twitch channel. And so, or maybe they hire people. I don't know, but it's in their control. It's their, it's their thing. And it's, I think the more wrestling companies start letting wrestlers have their thing, the more you're going to start to see people push away from the idea that WWE is the be all and end all of making a name for yourself in this business.
They've been around for a while, right? And so they're used to doing things their way. And but time is changing so fast. You got to keep up with what's coming out. And I think this generation, and I'll give props to the Bucks. The Bucks and Twitter was like they were back in the day. They were called the internet darlings, right? They were quick on it, and I learned that real quick from them when they came into Bullet Club and been using the internet as a way to showcase myself not only in Japan, but especially here in America. So you gotta keep up with the times. Japan still I feel is still behind. AEW's got all those guys, this generation that uses social media. They are the one that's pushing it and trying new things. You got the Bucks with their YouTube. You got, I think, Sammy with his YouTube channel, too. You got, like you say, Miro with the Twitch and the gaming. So everybody's pushing the envelope. All these different roster trailblazers. There you go.
There you go. Pioneers.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah, no, it definitely – it seems like WWE's ability to kind of hold people down, it's not – there the way it was. You're seeing people just buck up against it. Not just in wrestling. As I was talking about when we were talking about traveling to Los Angeles for Resurgence, American Airlines is dealing with the fact that people don't want to work there. Companies like Wendy's, companies like various companies, big and small, are dealing with the fact that like people don't want to work if you're going to pay them so little, or if you're going to impinge on them the way that a lot of corporate companies will. I mean, that's part of the problem with WWE. It's gotten so big that they have to micromanage all their wrestlers, because the minute one of them steps out of line, that's a publicly traded billion-dollar company that you're screwing with. And if you've ever seen Network, the primal forces of nature don't let you mess with billion-dollar publicly traded companies. You will atone at some point. And so companies like AEW, where it's private, they have the ability to let a little more controversy reign just because they don't have the weight of those shareholders on them. And so WWE is... And this, I think this is why those sale rumors keep flying around, is because WWE has to figure out how they are going to manage being this big of a brand, because no wrestling company has ever been this big. There has never been brand, you know, licenses as profitable as stuff like Stone Cold Steve Austin or Mankind. Or the, I mean, they still own The Rock, basically. Like, yes, Dwayne Johnson has his own things that he's going on, but a lot of the Bramble Bull stuff is WWE. A lot of the... John Cena, WWE owns his name. You know, it's very, yes, he gets to use it because it's his birth name, but they've got so much John Cena trademarks and all that kind of stuff that it's a complete, in the way that the Bucks are trailblazing on the internet, WWE is kind of trailblazing in the boardroom, trying to figure out how does wrestling work on a publicly traded level like that. Because AEW, they're not answerable to shareholders. New Japan is, yes, Bushiroad, I believe, is answerable to shareholders, but New Japan itself isn't. Same with Ring of Honor. Sinclair is you know, they have people that they have to be deal with, but Ring of Honor doesn't necessarily need to appease them. Whereas with WWE, they and even even in the days of WCW, they weren't a company that had to deal with the publicly traded part, because Turner was privately owned. And in fact, once Turner went public and once the AOL Time Warner stuff happened, that was the death of WCW. And so this is why I say, like, WWE, they're in uncharted territory, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in the future.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Another place that's trailblazing is NOAH, DDT, Tokyo Joshi Pro, the cyber agent group. Mm-hmm. They're also sort of figuring out how to be an actual wrestling company, not just a wrestler. It's going to be weird. It's going to be wild. It's going to be great for wrestlers in a lot of ways, because there has never been this many profitable companies in wrestling. Like, yes, there have been profitable territories in wrestling, but now AEW, New Japan, Ring of Honor, WWE, all of these companies are at the point where they can take care of people. And that can only mean good things. But Lauren, what do you kind of think of the... I mean, because I've dumped a lot of information here. I've dumped a lot of information about WWE's history of public traded, but the overall idea of the fact that, like, this is the first time a wrestling company has ever been this big. How do you think they're kind of doing, like, overall? Do you think,
I've been watching wrestling, like, forever. Yep. So it's very, I don't want to say it's overwhelming, but I'm just surprised, like, how... Mm-hmm. If we're out during this pandemic, like, how someone could be out and you could still be taken care of. Like, you don't have to worry about, like, getting another job or wrestling somewhere else or whatever. You're financially taken care of and covered. And that's something that that's just great in general. Like, I was very shocked when, especially for a company like Ring of Honor, I heard like they paid like every single one of their people, like nobody had to be put out of work or nothing. And I'm just surprised by that. And I know companies like WWE and AEW do the same thing, but it's just, it's nice to hear that. It's very refreshing.
Yeah, no, and that's kind of the point is for so long, I think there was this exploitative nature to the wrestling business that, don't get me wrong, it's still, especially on the independent scene, it's still there in full. But on the professional level, it's starting to get to the point where, you know, and where, you know, people can start to wrestle. I mean, Tama, you had, like you said, you had 8 months off. You didn't have to go finding new employment. Yes, we did a podcast venture, but it was, you know, this isn't like this big side gig that's going to take over wrestling. Like, this was just this, you were taken care of. New Japan kept you fed and kept you, and eventually brought you back. Like, it's very, it's very good. It's very good to see that from wrestling companies. I mean, even WWE, they let go of Samoa Joe. Now he's back as an authority figure on NXT. So even these WWE budget cut releases aren't necessarily as, yes, some of them are absolutely ghoulish, but they're not as sinister as I think a lot of people would have you believe, especially when, you know, people keep being brought back in, some, so to speak. It's definitely going to be a wild time as we head towards this summer. Like I said, fans are going to be back for Ring of Honor, Best in the World. Fans are going to be back for Slammiversary with Impact Wrestling. WWE is about to go back on the road. AEW is about to go back on the road. New Japan's coming to California. Get those shots, people. Wrestling's back. Wrestling's back, and we can really do this. We can really do this. Even my immune compromised ass is thinking about flying. That's how far we've come.
You got your second shot, right? You're all set to go.
Oh yeah, I've gotten two of the Moderna, two of the Pfizer. I got a couple of Johnson & Johnsons. The antibodies are raging through my system. How about you, Lauren? You all vaxxed up?
I've been vaccinated since February.
Hell yeah!
I work in healthcare, so yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice. So you're on the first
people to actually get. Yeah.
I got one more.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I know you. So next week you're gonna have that second shot. Are you Moderna or Pfizer?
I'm Moderna.
Hell yeah! There you go.
I might get the Pfizer after that. We'll see.
No, they're all.
I'm gonna just go take some random shots.
They're all. Don't get me wrong. They're all good. Even the Johnson & Johnson is proven to be pretty damn solid. But there's the Moderna gang. There's the Pfizer gang. We just got to know who everyone's in. for the inevitable game of dodgeball that I think this is going to accumulate in. I don't know. It feels like we all need to have a big game of kickball or something to celebrate.
Who do you rep, dog?
All joking aside, I got the Pfizer down at the United Center.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah. But yeah, get those shots, everyone. Please get out, get vaccinated, so we can get to that 70%. Apparently, we're not going to make it to July 4th, but mid July maybe we can get that 70% vaccination rate. Shout out to everyone in the chat that I've seen a lot of people that are talking about getting their shots or have gotten their shots. It's good to hear. It warms my heart. But Tama, where can they find you on this road to resurgence? On this road to opening back up.
Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at Tama_Tonga. You can find me on Instagram, the good bad guy, Tama Tonga.
Hell yeah. And Lauren, if you want people to find you, where can they find you? If you don't, that's also valid.
I don't have Twitter. That's fine. Instagram. I don't have any of that stuff. I just have Facebook and
you can find Lauren at Thomas Island. Come on,
yeah, there you
that's
go.
That's about it. That's all you need to know.
come subscribe to that Islander tier at patreon.com/Thomas Island. Hang out and happy hour with me, with Tama, with Lauren, with all the guests that we've had over the past few weeks and the guests that we're going to be bringing on. Again, patreon.com/Thomas Island. That Islander tier is well worth it. Also, shout out to the folks that have been paying our bills as well, whether it be ExpressVPN, whether it be Manscaped, to be the Man Comics. Y'all have been taking very good care of us over here at Thomas Island. I know I've got the haircut. I want to be a carny and be like, oh yeah, I went crazy with the Manscaped box, but I gotta give a shout out to the folks over at Floyd's Barbershop. I didn't go quite that quite that wild with it, but I will say especially the latest box Manscaped sent me, they've sent me some real good stuff. And if you use that code Tama over at Manscaped, they can hook you up as well. Well, this has been a delightful hour of Tama's Island. Thank you, Lauren. Thank you, Tama. Thank you, everyone who joined us on Twitch and in the chat. Thank you, everyone who's listening to this post recording, whether it be through your iTunes feed, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. We will be back next week, and we will be talking all the wrestling. Thanks again for joining us. Enjoy your week. We'll see y'all at Happy Hour if you're an Islander.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to this week's Tama's Island. Find more great Tama's Island content like the Shotgun series, weekly happy hour Zoom calls with Tama, video versions of the podcast, and much, much more at patreon.com/Tama's Island and visit @Tama's Island on Instagram and Twitter.